Hello, welcome to our program on careers. I'm Irene Lubin, a volunteer reader for Sun Sounds of Arizona. I would like to begin today with an article which appeared in the Wall Street Journal on January 14th. The title of the article is How Older Applicants Navigate Job Hunt. This article was written for the Wall Street Journal by Conrad Poutier and Lindsay Ellis. The Wall Street Journal recently wrote about Lynn Lee, who is 65 years old, and her long search for employment after a layoff. Her story touched a nerve with readers, many of whom are also hunting for work in a very tough job market these days, while feeling as though their age counts against them. Keep hearing that I am overqualified when in reality it probably is only because I'm 65, one reader wrote. I feel like a ghost at job fairs, another said. And here are stories of some of those who heard ways back into the workforce. Crashing a cocktail party. Scott Wallace, who is 68, lives in Houston and was laid off from his sales job at a chemical company back in 2023 after a decades-long career in the oil and gas industry. He applied for jobs in his field without luck and then took a chance on something completely different, leaning into his love of wine and his sales experience. He walked into a local wine shop to ask about work and was hired for a seasonal job. In 2024, a friend from his oil industry days tipped him off about a party for entrepreneurs in fields related to gas and oil, and he decided to show up as if he had been invited. At the bar, he chatted up the chief executive of a software company, drawing on his knowledge of the oil and gas industry, and he got an interview. That led to a six-month contract as a business development representative. Last year, he landed a four-month contract sales job with a French software company. Then he decided to start a completely new kind of work. He became certified as a substitute teacher. Wallace lives alone and said he can get by on savings and Social Security, but he wants extra income to pay for things such as trips, presents for his grandchildren, and the occasional date. Plus, he said, working keeps him mentally fresh. Moving to part-time work. After being laid off in May from a regulatory affairs job for a medical device manufacturer, Scott Thiel, 60, aimed for temporary gigs and consulting work. He got an operations director job with a manufacturer in August, working 20 hours a week. But I'm still looking a bit for full-time work, but the market is really tough out there, said Thiel, who lives in Indianapolis. If I just stop looking for a full-time job and continue on with contract work, or do I continue to do this bifurcated approach? He is dealing with another conundrum, too, whether showing his full resume telegraphs his age. A placement company advised him to share just 15 years of work experience to sidestep ageism. But Thiel said that in an interview with companies, he was asked he didn't share his full background, as it showed expertise. He has learned to tailor his resume depending on the company and the role. And then an email to the manager. Jean Davidson, 75, retired from the insurance industry back in 2014. But she said that being at home proved to be very boring. She has picked up a couple of temporary jobs since then to keep busy and did so again last year. Spotting an insurance office in her neighborhood near Orlando, Florida, she decided to email the manager there. That led to an invitation to the office, and soon she was making $15 an hour greeting customers and answering the phone. I just like having a job, she says. She's currently taking a break to take care of her husband, but she wants to get back into the workforce. Driving for Uber. Jeff Falls, who is 64, has been driving for Uber since losing his job as a financial advisor at a major asset manager firm 2 years ago. The money supplements his Social Security payments. He feels financially squeezed by the rising cost of living, and his Uber income is down, which he attributes to rising competition from self-driving Waymos. He worries that driving for Uber will no longer be a decent source of income in a few years, and he's still out there looking for work and finance. Falls, who lives with his 10-year-old daughter in Scottsdale, Arizona, is pessimistic about finding a new finance job. His long search has proved fruitless, and he feels trapped between having experience that made him overqualified and passed over for entry-level jobs, but being too old to land a senior position. Going deep, not wide. Some job seekers out there cast a wide net. Michelle Helfgott Waters, 60, focused on her niche experience after being laid off in July from a program manager role. It was the second time in about 2 years that the Huntsville, Alabama resident lost a job. This time, she focused on her professional experience with veterans. She attended virtual career fairs for military spouses, and she researched companies in advance if an employer of interest did not have a position that she qualified for. She asked whom she could meet. On December 30th, her search paid off with an offer for a project manager role that came up through a connection, a remote role helping military veterans find jobs. She said she expects to be making more than in her past role. In this market, especially being over 45, it is totally about your network, Helfgott Waters said. The next article that I would like to read for you today is from a Wall Street Journal from September 13th. A guaranteed income won't stop people from wanting to work. Economists worry that a universal basic income would make recipients lazier. Programs around the world find the opposite is true, write Nobel Prize winners Abhijit V. Banerjee and Esther Duflo in this article. The rise of artificial intelligence has made the conversation about a universal basic income, known as a UBI, more urgent than ever. There are various predictions about what robots and automation and large language models will do to the availability of good jobs. But Elon Musk, Sam Altman, and other tech moguls share the concern that a large fraction of jobs currently performed by humans will soon be turned over to machines. The idea behind UBI is to give everyone a guaranteed income that is enough to live on. One critical question is whether an inflow of unearned cash would cause people to become lazy and stop working altogether. Standard economic models predict a negative income effect on labor supply, and policymakers across the world very publicly worry about it. Behavioral economists have also flagged the concern that if people receive a guaranteed income, they will choose to spend it on leisure, even when it is not in their long-term interest. By working today, they would accumulate useful experience and skills that they could parlay into better jobs in the future, but it may be too tempting to take the time off now and forego the opportunity for self-improvement. In recent years, a number of countries have introduced conditional cash transfer, CCT, programs, making it possible for economists to study the effects of simply giving people money. In 2010, 27 low and middle income countries had a CCT program. By 2016, the number had reached 64. These programs had no work requirement, although they had other requirements, such as sending children to school or requiring pregnant mothers to have their babies in a hospital. CCT programs in low-income countries are not directly comparable to UBI in a wealthy country such as the United States, but they can shed light on the question of whether an inflow of unearned cash causes people to become lazy. Our study of data from 7 programs in 6 countries found no evidence that it does. People who receive a cash transfer are no less likely to work and work just as many hours as those who don't. These surprising results were replicated in a 2024 paper from the National Bureau of Economic Research that looked at cash transfers in middle and low-income countries. On the average, transfers actually lead to increases in labor force participation and days of work. Why does the evidence contradict the standard economic models? The logic of standard economics is that if you are richer, you would want to consume more of everything you enjoy, including leisure. But being richer also opens up economic opportunities. You could use your extra money to buy a machine that makes you more productive and therefore encourages longer hours, or some fertilizer that takes time and effort to put into the ground. Being a little less poor could also make you less despondent or panicked about money, and that in turn can make you want to try a little bit more. A recent experiment in India, some workers were randomly paid early for work already done. The researchers found that this change alone, not being paid extra, just having some cash on hand, made the worker 7% more productive than those who were just paid a few days later and less prone to make errors. In graduation programs pioneered by BRAC, B-R-A-C, which is a development NGO, non-governmental organization in Bangladesh, the poorest of the poor are given a productive asset, such as a cow, or a sewing machine, or even honeybees, and some initial economic, technical, and emotional support in order to help them graduate from poverty. In general, the beneficiaries of such programs around the world work the same amount or more than non-beneficiaries. In an experiment in Ghana, we offered people an opportunity to make cloth bags for pay as a side gig. Interestingly, poor people who had already benefited from a graduation program were at least as likely as others to take up our offer, despite being busier to start with. They also earned more money from bag-making activities, making because they took on more complex projects and made fewer errors. All these studies tell an important and coherent story. There is a lot of involuntary unemployment or underemployment in rural areas in poor countries, and this unused capacity can be unlocked when resources are poured in. Social transfer programs, the handing out of cash to poor communities, have the potential to have large multiplier effects. From the point of view of supporters of a UBI in wealthy countries, this is encouraging. Not only don't people work less when they are guaranteed an income, they might actually put in more effort at work. And the fact that they have more money to spend leads to the creation of even more jobs. This all suggests that we don't need to worry so much about the typical economist's concern that a UBI would make people lazy. Instead, we need to start thinking more about how to satisfy the human need for meaningful work in a future where more and more jobs are done by artificial intelligence. The next article that I would like to read for you is also from a recent issue of the Wall Street Journal. Late Career Job Loss Blurs Retirement. This article was written for the journal by Veronica Dower and Ann Turgeson. 4 people open up about finances and how they spend their time after a sudden change. One man who lost his job in his early 60s is transitioning into retirement by working 25 hours a week And a woman who recently got laid off in her 50s worries about her finances if she doesn't find a new job. A bumpy transition often awaits people who get laid off or take buyouts late in their careers. For many, the line between working years and retirement starts to blur. It is a growing concern for people with jobs in the federal government or at private companies cutting jobs. Economic uncertainty has persisted in recent months, though employers continue to add jobs recently. For older people who want to stay in the workforce, a layoff can be followed by a longer spell of unemployment. It takes nearly 26 weeks on the average for people ages 55 to 64 to find a new job, compared with 19 weeks for people ages 25 to 34, according to the United States Bureau of Labor Statistics. People laid off at higher ages are less likely to move into a new field than those who quit, said Kevin Cahill, an economist at FTI Consulting. Ageism and higher compensation expectations can be obstacles to reemployment, he said. Older career workers who find new jobs take an 11% pay cut on the average, according to a forthcoming study Cahill co-wrote. Those who retire might need to break into their savings early. They might miss out on making 401k or IRA contributions, never mind the catch-up contributions allowed for those 50 and older. We spoke with four people who had late career layoffs or burnouts. First, Kevin Crane from Gloucester, Mass. And New York City. His current age is 64, and his annual spending is $240,000. Kevin Crane was the head of retirement research at the Bank of America. Then, back in 2023, the bank offered him early retirement. He never imagined the life he studied could be so satisfying. Crane assumed he would work full bore until at least age 65. After getting paid past disappointment at retiring 2 years sooner than expected, he quickly pivoted into a retirement philosophy of what's next. Crane, who is 64, has built a second act that includes part-time paid work as a consultant and the director of a retirement industry association focused on 401k products and services that produce a retirement income. He provides free advice to two nonprofits on aging and two startups he has invested in. He makes less money, but enjoys having control over his time. Typically, he works about 5 hours a day, leaving time for the gym and for reading. He used to assume that he would retire to a life of leisure, but his father's retirement experience dissuaded him. Dad went from 100 miles per hour to zero and never did anything else, said Crane, who believes this left his father vulnerable to dementia. Crane said the transition was easy because he was already working from home. He and his wife, Rebecca Crane, 63, split their time between New York City and Gloucester, Massachusetts, where they recently purchased a home. Crane earns about $110,000 a year, which supplements distributions from CAS and executive deferred compensation and restricted stock programs. Together, they replace about 80% of his pre-retirement pay. In 2027, the restricted stock and deferred compensation will run out, and the couple will begin tapping their retirement and brokerage accounts, which have 90% in fixed income. They plan to delay claiming Social Security until age 70. Their net worth is more than $5 million and includes retirement accounts with $1.9 million. Their only debt is a $360,000 mortgage with a rate of 2.8%. The couple spend about $23,000 a month, half on their mortgage and rent for their Manhattan apartment. Premiums for health insurance run them about $2,000 a month. Given his low tolerance for investment risk, Green is happy to be relatively shielded from the stock market's volatility. Having had heart issues, I don't want the financial stress, he said. Next up is Drew Myers from the Villages of Florida. Current age is 68. His annual spending is $96,000. Drew Myers planned to work until he was 70, but the technology salesman was not devastated to be laid off at 67. Getting around $70,000 in severance pay helped. He initially looked for another job in technology. He got his first round interviews, but he hit subsequent roadblocks that he attributed to ageism. Since he was no longer working, he had the time to care for his father, who was dying of cancer. For about the first year of his retirement, he shuttled his dad to doctor's appointments, made sure his dad ate and kept him company before he died. Retirement did not feel real for Drew and his wife, Anne Marie O'Connell Myers, until April, when they moved from Connecticut to the Villages of Florida, a large retirement community. It took time to adjust to withdrawing money from their retirement accounts and no longer having paychecks. Their expenses have been higher than they would have liked for most of this year, largely because of the move. Now that they are settling in, though, they expect their monthly spending to drop to about $8,000 from roughly $10,000. That includes about $1,500 toward health insurance premiums. The couple have about $1.3 million in retirement savings. He has a pension of about $800 a month from a former employer and about $4,090 a month in Social Security. They have about $16,000 in timeshare debt. They are renting a three-bedroom home for a year before they commit to buying in the Villages. They anticipate spending about $350,000, which they plan to pay for with funds he will inherit from the sale of his father's house. They are enjoying daily swims and golfing several times a week, with plans to take up pickleball. And next is Brenda Pitts, who lives in Brooklyn, New York. Current age is 56. Her annual spending is $156,000. Brenda Pitts got laid off in March. She doesn't consider herself retirement, but if she can't find a new job, she is concerned she will have to rethink her plan to retire in New York. The Brooklyn resident is 56. Is networking and enjoying having more free time in the city. She is looking to keep working in the financial services industry, but she has found many companies currently have hiring freezes. She misses her colleagues and is glad to have that many have reached out to her. Pitts has always feared falling back into the financial insecurity she grew up with. She is the youngest of five children who were raised by a custodian and a roofer. I was always worried about being one check away from disaster, said Pitts, who attended Harvard University largely on scholarship and got an MBA. While in her 30s, Pitts paid off her student loans and started saving for retirement. Then in her 40s, she left Silicon Valley and moved to New York to work in financial services, where she saw more women working in their 50s. In recent years, she has been saving the annual maximum allowed in both her IRA and 401k accounts. Last year, she put about $80,000 into the two, including her employer's match and the catch-up contributions people 50 and older can make. She currently has $2.3 million saved. More recently, she put her contributions on hold. She worries that her $4 million goal might be unattainable. Pitts works about 4 hours each day on her job search and consults free to nonprofits. She is a member of museums and film societies, and she enjoys exhibits, movies, and live music, everything from punk to opera. She spends about $13,000 a month, including $5,175 on her mortgage and maintenance fees, $1,400 on health-related costs, and $3,000 for food and entertainment. Pitts has stopped most of her charitable contributions for now, but she hopes to use some of her savings to help young people from financially disadvantaged families. I don't have children of my own, but I'd like my legacy to be that I made the path easier for younger people who come behind me, she said. And finally, Cartier Snyder from Plano, Texas. Current age is 70. Annual spending is $108,000. For years, Cartier Snyder, a veteran of the printing business, watched the industry change. By his early 60s, most clients had shifted to digital. Demand for printed material, such as corporate annual reports, had plummeted. In 2019, Snyder accepted an offer to retire from his longtime employer in return for health care coverage until he qualified for Medicare the following year. Initially, Snyder, who had planned to retire at 67, worried about whether he and his wife, Barbara Snyder, would have enough money. Then, a health care about 6 years before the buyout helped him put retirement in perspective. An X-ray for a persistent cough revealed a mass in the former marathon runner's chest. This turned out to be an aneurysm and led to the discovery of a failing heart valve. After three surgeries, he was expected to live about 5 to 10 years. He decided retiring earlier than planned was a good thing. I didn't want to die at my desk at work, Snyder said. Now he has more time to spend with his grandchildren. That helps him. He heads to the gym 3 mornings a week, and his wife enjoys quilting for charity. They garden together. You need to find your new purpose once you leave your job, he said. This is all we have time for on our program on careers for today. I hope you've enjoyed listening in and will enjoy the rest of your day. And thank you for listening in. I'm Irene Lubin, a volunteer reader, and you're listening to Sun Sounds of Arizona.